Welcome back to the Tank Me Later podcast. This is episode 56. And for this one, Roto World Zach Hanshew is going to join me to talk about the Bucks, the 76ers, and the Clippers. So let's go ahead and get into it. And quickly, before I bring Zach in, I just wanted to remind you that support for this Fantasy Basketball International podcast is brought to you by Manscaped, who is the best in men's below-the-waist grooming. Shaving your jewels doesn't have to be risky business anymore thanks to the Lawnmower 5.0 Ultra. This trimmer is all about keeping things smooth and safe so you can trim with confidence. Treat your wrinkleberries and join the 10 million men worldwide who trust Manscaped by going to manscaped.com to get 20% off plus free shipping with code FBI20. With Manscaped, it's easy grooming, no surprises. We know every dude gets the heebie-jeebies when it's time for a close shave down under, especially when using the wrong tools. That's precisely why Manscaped is my go-to for those delicate spots. Trust me, this trimmer will be your crown jewel's new best buddy. Get 20% off plus free shipping with the code FBI20 at manscaped.com. That is 20% off plus free shipping with the code FBI20 at manscaped.com. Show your balls some love and feel free. As a dove, I'm going to go ahead and bring Zach in here. Zach, we were just talking briefly before. It's been a few months since we've, like, outside of messaging, talked face-to-face. But we had a nice run there doing the Q&As and stuff. So it's good to kind of get the band back together, even if it is just kind of a duo.
Yeah, man, it's great to be talking to you again. Like you said, we were chatting before we jumped on here. Excuse me for not knowing this, but I think maybe since the last time we talked, you've got new theme music for the podcast. It's dope. I love it. I was listening to that intro and I loved it, man. Maybe that's just me not paying attention, but it's great if it's new. I love it. And I got to hear you use the word wrinkleberries, so that was even better, man. That just kicked things off.
Yeah, I have to keep what I'm supposed to say, like, in front of me, so I'm not looking at the screen at all, just in case you give even like a half a smile and I see it, I'm gonna die laughing. So I have to make sure that I'm not looking at whoever the guest is during these, because I'm just too immature to keep a straight face if I see somebody else start to lose. Even like a straight, or maybe it's just in my head, you can keep a straight face. I'm going to think he's probably laughing. So then I'm going to start laughing, but it's fun to read that. But, man, we're going to talk about some hoops, but while we're recording this, Dallas just went up 21 in the second quarter early on. So Luka is not making this, 3-0 comeback possible at this point. We'll see if maybe Minnesota can turn things around. But right now he's got 20, was single-handedly outscoring Minnesota for a while there. But it's pretty fun to watch. So quickly, Zach, Dallas, Boston in the finals, just assuming, you know, we're to go ahead and assume that way if Minnesota does complete the historic comeback, they can thank me for jinxing them. Dallas versus Boston in the finals. So you got?
Dallas in six, baby.
Ooh, in six.
Dallas in six, man.
Man, I would love to see that. Anybody but Boston has been my slogan since round two, I think.
Dude, who is – and again, Boston plays such good team basketball. They have so many different guys that can do so many different things. You can have your boy Bald Derek go off for 30 on any given night. You got Jaylen Brown dropping 40. You've had Tatum playing like pretty much garbage this entire play. I mean, and you never know. Tatum could go off for 50 against Brooklyn in a closeout game seven, or he could give you 12 points on 17 shots in a closeout against Golden State in the finals. You never know what you're going to get. And so who do you trust at the end of a game? Do you trust Kyrie, who hit arguably one of the biggest shots in finals history over Steph Curry, to complete a historic comeback? Do you trust Luka Doncic, one of the league's best closers? Or do you trust Jason Tatum, who has given you choke job after choke job? So I'm going to go with the two arguably one of the best scoring backcourts of all time that keeps coming up in interviews. I'm going to go with the closers, man. The best players on the court will be Kyrie and Luka, and that's who I'm going to trust. Give it to me in six.
I love that. I would love to see it. The three best players in the court being Luka, Kyrie, and Derek White, of course. But your boy Daniel Gafford, just in case you're listening to this on audio, not watching the video, Zach Hanshew loves a Daniel Gafford lob. So I don't know if that has anything to do with the fact that he was a wizard for a long time and Zach is a noted or well-noted, huge diehard Washington Wizards fan. but that's what's going on in the NBA right now. Obviously, there's only a few teams left, but today we're actually going to talk about three teams that we're hoping to be at this point of the, like in the season, still playing basketball. They are not for various reasons, mostly injury related. And a lot of these, I was telling you before, Zach, that a lot of these have gone to about an hour and a half just because there's, you know, so many young guys to like really dive into and talk about, like, well, what's this going to look like for this guy in, you know, the next few years? How quickly, you know, what other moves does this team need to make? A lot of these teams are pretty straightforward. Not a ton of detail to really get into. I think maybe there's a little bit in Milwaukee that Doc Rivers kind of came in and said, no, we're not using any of those young boys. We're just going to stick with the old guys. So we'll actually start in Milwaukee. So the Bucks went 49-33 this year, finished third in the East, obviously playing without Giannis in that first round series, and then missing Dame a little bit as well. They lost to the Pacers in six games. They'll have picks 23 and 33 in this upcoming draft, so they can add a little bit of talent there, or use it to make some moves. And then, Zach, I've been assigning like a team direction for each team. Like, you know, some of the other ones, oh, this is a rebuilding team, but they have their franchise player. The Nets, for example, I just said they're in hell. Like, I have no idea like what they're going to do. The Bucks are a contender. It's just when they're healthy. The last 2 years, they haven't had Giannis healthy. And that's, you know, kind of a deal breaker. You're going to lose in the first round if Giannis isn't available. And then adding in Damian Lillard also being injured this year. What's kind of your overall take on this Bucks team?
Yeah, so like you mentioned, man, first round exit. Giannis is hurt, obviously, and you know, you called me a noted Wizards fan. I'm a noted Pacers and Tyrese Halliburton fan. I mean, first and foremost, we'll get that out of the way. And I love the run that they went on, and that was one of the most competitive sweeps I've ever watched. That was such a good series. Boston, a heartbreaker, but a good series nonetheless. But would Indiana have even gotten out of the first round had Giannis not been injured? I think if we're being real about it, I think they would. They had a puncher's chance, but no. Milwaukee would have had, again, like I said with the Dallas Mavericks, the best player on the court, head and shoulders, is Giannis, and Giannis would have done Giannis things. So, yeah, let's just get that out of the way. Milwaukee should have won that series had he been healthy. Who knows what they would have done after that. Would they have beaten the injury-riddled Knicks and given Boston some trouble? Boston and Milwaukee have always played each other really well, especially here in recent years. So, yeah, the direction of this team is let's hope everybody's healthy next season. Chris Middleton has played 88 total games the last two seasons. That's been huge for them because he's their second option. You know, behind Dame, he's, you know, Giannis had to step up as a playmaker this season, but it should be Chris Middleton operating as that secondary playmaker. So Giannis with the career high assist this year because of that. But you got to take some pressure off of those guys and have Middleton available as that third option.
Yeah. And quickly with that, with the Pacers comment you made, like, sure, they could have, we probably would have lost, or at least it would have been a tight series, you know, potentially gone seven games, potentially the Bucks just winning, had Giannis been healthy. But another thing, I just find this so crazy, is that there was four games separating the Knicks at 2 and the Heat at 8. The Cavs were 4, one game ahead of the Pacers. In the hypothetical scenario that Cleveland had lost one more game, was the 6th seed, ran into the injured Bucks in the first round, ran into the injured Knicks, injured-ish Knicks in the second round, and then they're going to the conference finals. Does J.B. Bickerstaff get fired? It's just very, very interesting because now they're also, you know, not saying that the Pacers don't deserve credit, because I do think that they're like a young team on the rise, like definitely going to be a competitive team the next few years. They have all the makings for it. Would people be talking about them that way had they not just, you know, in a way, lucked into having that matchup in the first round where Giannis isn't playing and Damian Lillard misses time? Now they go on this Eastern Conference Finals run.
I mean, that's a great question, man. I think that's one of the great what ifs, and we run into that in the playoffs every year. Yeah. You know, obviously injuries come into play. You could argue Boston's road to the final one of the easiest we can remember, you know, in recent years, just due to injuries. Cleveland wasn't at full strength. Miami obviously wasn't at full strength. You know, Indiana wasn't at full strength. Tyrese getting hurt for the last 2.5 games. But yeah, the Bickerstaff one, man, I had this conversation a couple weeks ago because they played a tight 7-game series against Orlando, and obviously mm-hmm. Most got that big extension, and Bickerstaff gets fired. I think Orlando is on the rise, and Cleveland is viewed as, hey, we went out and got the superstar in Mitchell. We've compiled all these pieces. This is a win-now team, and if we're not getting over the hump, somebody's got to take the fall for it. So, yeah, I think that's a very big what-if, man. I think that's a very interesting thought exercise right there. I have no idea. I don't think he does get fired. If they make it to the Eastern Conference Finals, I don't think so.
Yeah, well, then every single report about – everyone on the team came out shortly after the game ended. I guess his was a few days after because he didn't get fired immediately, but people or reports saying that he was, you know, too hands-on and very specific, I guess, with his coaching. There was that report. There was reports about Donovan Mitchell, Jared Allen, Evan Mobley, Darius Garland, all of them either, you know, potentially looking at a trade if they don't trade the other guy or growing frustrated or whatever. There was a, was it Marcus Morris or Markieff Morris? One of the whichever Morris twin was on that team came out and basically called Jared Allen soft for not playing with the rib injury. So kind of a mess there. But now that we've talked about the Pacers and Cavs, we'll actually talk about the Bucks. Yeah, they're interesting because, you know, obviously signed Adrian Griffin after firing Coach Bud because they lost in the first round without Giannis. Then fired Adrian Griffin when they were, I don't remember exactly what the record was, but it's something that was way too good for them to fire a coach. And then they were worse after they hired Doc Rivers. And then they lost in the first round. And not to say they shouldn't have fired Adrian Griffin, because if that's what they felt the right decision was, then that's fine. I don't think it was a case of, oh, he was winning so many games, like you have to keep rolling with him. Like if he was coaching or if they had that much success, and they still felt the need to fire him, they must have just really had no confidence, buyer's remorse, after just signing him. The Doc Rivers hire is certainly an interesting one, but they didn't fire him. I'm assuming Doc Rivers is going to be back again next year, and do you think they're just going to run it back with the same squad?
Yeah, I think that's what's going to happen. To your point about coaching, obviously that came from the players, right? So, yeah, I'm sure it came from Giannis. Mm-hmm. I mean, talking about the Clippers here later, and they just gave Tyronn Lue a big extension, and obviously yep. Clippers have not been winning due to their superstars being injured. And it's the same situation in Milwaukee, but like you said, somebody took the heat for that. It was Bud, and then obviously Griffin got fired midseason, and then you had Doc Rivers coaching the All-Star game after coming in. And so that's are the players buying in on these guys? Giannis clearly had his hand in this and wanted that coach to be out. So I do think they're going to run back with the same squad. It's going to be the same coach. If I'm not mistaken, the Bucks are either the first or second oldest team in the NBA. I want to say they're the oldest. I may be off on that. But I think they're up there. So I think it will be interesting next season to see, one, how health plays into this, and two, how will they keep up with some of these younger teams? We're talking about Cleveland and Indiana, who are both in their division. And Indiana has a bunch of young guns. That's one of their strengths, is the run-and-gun offense, their speed, their pace. How's Milwaukee going to do keeping up with some of these younger teams moving forward? Giannis is still at his peak, but you have a guy like a Brook Lopez who I think is coming up on 37 years old. Dame is no spring chicken anymore. Chris Middleton is getting up there in age. So it's going to be very interesting to see what they do next year. But I think as long as you have Giannis and Dame, you're going to be a very competitive team in the playoffs if they're healthy.
Definitely, and that's what it comes down to is health, especially in the playoffs. But if we're looking at it for fantasy. We'll talk about Damian Lillard first. His numbers dropped a little bit, which I think was kind of to be expected playing alongside Giannis as opposed to just kind of being the star of the show. I've done two redraft mocks this very, very early in the summer. One of them was even before the regular season ended because Kingy, you know, he gets excited about it and then it gets me excited about it. So we just do mock drafts before the season before ends. But Dame went 20th in one of them and 27th in the other. So obviously this is a guy that's kind of been a late first rounder recently. I think went around the turn this past year. Where do you think at this point you would draft a guy like Damian Lillard coming off a season where he was Per Basketball Monster 25th in 9-cat, 24.3 points, 7 assists, pretty bad field goal percentage. Obviously, the value is the points, the assists, the threes, and the elite free throws.
Yeah, I think that sounds appropriate third round. I think we saw this year, you know, as you mentioned, the early third round finish in terms of fantasy, that he's going to take that drop off from, you know, early first or late first, early second into maybe that mid third, early third type of conversation. You know, like you said, the assists, the threes, those were 5-year lows for him. The free throw percentage, elite field goal percentage. I think kind of to be expected. If you take a guard early, you know, the field goal percentage isn't going to be great. But again, assists are so valuable in fantasy. If you can get a guy early that's given out 7 assists and 24 points a game, you know, 3 triples, a steal, that's a guy that you can be confident in taking, definitely in taking in the third round. And he's a guy that you know has the potential to exceed that. So you're not drafting him at his ceiling right there. I think you're drafting him at or maybe a little below his floor with the expectation of, hey, some of these weeks he's going to be a first-round guy.
Yeah, I agree. I think 20th is probably a little bit closer to where I think I would draft him. I think maybe waiting to see after the draft, after free agency, what these teams are looking like before I really see exactly. But I think that range is very fair. But the numbers you're mentioning, like getting that in the third round, like that's incredible. Like you can pair that with potentially two guys in the first round and just really have an elite start to your team. One thing that did benefit the Bucks and Dame and a lot of their guys in fantasy this year, Dame played 73 games. Giannis played 73 games. Brook Lopez played 79 games. Bobby Portis played 82. The only key guy that was really missing time was Chris Middleton. So will this, as you mentioned, aging Bucks team be able to repeat that health? I think that's kind of the main question is, I mean, the other two teams we're going to be talking about have a number of guys that consistently have injury issues that are really, really good. And Dame's had his fair share of injuries in recent years. I think third round is a very fair place and could end up being a bargain considering getting him at the end of the first round this year was ended up being a pretty disappointing pick.
Yeah, I think Dame is a guy that, yeah, he's a guy that I think people are really sleeping on and really have forgotten just how valuable he was because he's not averaging 30 and 8 anymore. But when you take a look at it, we should never have expected him to average similar numbers to what he had in Portland. He's moving over to a different team, it's a different role. So I totally agree with you. I think getting him at his lowest value right now is going to end up being a bargain.
And we'll see. Maybe that'll rise as we get closer to the season again. And people are like, hey, Damian Lillard at 25? That's absurd. I need to get him earlier.
Yeah.
Maybe the name value will help a little bit. Yeah. Moving on to Giannis, who was better in 9-cat leagues. Obviously, last year was outside the top 100 because partially because the free throws were abysmal. And that was the case again this year. But he improved his defensive numbers, which were below one per game this year, went back up above. So he averaged 30.4 points, 11.5 rebounds, 6.5 assists, 1.2 steals, 1.1 blocks. I believe also made a pretty big leap with his field goal percentage, shot 61.1% after shooting 55.3% the year before. It seemed like he was able to put a little bit more effort on the defensive end in a way that resulted in more defensive numbers because Dame was there on the offensive end to really help things out. The year before, Giannis was the best offensive option on the team. They bring in Damian Lillard, who's one of the best offensive players in the league, and all of a sudden, hey, Giannis, like, one, you get easier looks, and two, you can put a little bit more energy on the defensive end. Is this just what we should expect from him moving forward, that even though he's going to be really bad from the free throw line, the nine cap value is still going to look pretty good?
Yeah, absolutely, man. And like you said, the field goal percentage, that was a career high. The assists, 6.5 assists, career high. We touched on that earlier that, hey, no Chris Middleton for a decent bit of the season, playing some low minutes, injured, went off. You know, Giannis had to take that next step as a playmaker. But if you look at Giannis' numbers, man, six straight seasons with at least 27 points, 11 rebounds, 5 assists, 8 of his last 9 seasons with at least 1 steal and 1 block average. We can forget about the free throw percentage. I think if you're drafting Giannis and you're looking solely at, hey, he finished outside the top 30 in fantasy value on a per-game basis, or last season outside the top 100, that's a good benchmark. It's a good gauge for how he's doing relative to other players. But if you're playing in a punt free throw percentage build, he ranked 3rd in a per game basis last season. Like, it's one category. It's the same reason why we shouldn't get too excited for, you know, a guy whose primary value is blocks, like a Walker Kessler who struggled in some other areas last season. But Giannis, yeah, this is what we should expect from him moving forward. Forget about the free throw percentage. Look at the elite numbers. Nobody else that you draft in this range aside from Nikola Jokic is going to give you averages that even come close to this. And Jokic doesn't do what he does on the defensive end.
Yeah, and I think that was the issue with Giannis last year. It's the reason that he ranked outside the top 100, it's not the free throws. I mean, it was pretty similar this year, his free throw numbers. It was the fact that defensive stats dropped, which I think really impacted his value. Those went back up. Yeah, like you said, Giannis is elite with a punt free throw percentage build, and I don't think anybody's going to draft Giannis and say, okay, I'm going to have a ton of success from the free throw line, unless they intentionally draft a few 90% free throw shooters and they really want to offset it and be competitive in that category. Easier to lean in to a punt free throw percentage build right there, because he's, I'd say, elite in 6 other categories, or at least really good in 6 other categories, and then the turnovers and threes aren't to die for either. But you pair that first round, then if you're able to Domantas Sabonis in the second round, that's a pretty good start to redraft.
Absolutely.
You mentioned guys that block shots, and that's where all their value comes from. So let's talk about Brook Lopez. So he'll give you blocks and he'll give you threes, and that has him as a top 50 player in 9-cat leagues. Ooh, that rhymed a little bit. That was kind of cool. But outside those two categories, not giving you anything. So it says he's a top 50 guy, but he's not a guy that you're going to draft in the top 50 in your league. Do you think that he's still kind of worth that mid-round pick, considering he is, I believe, 36 now? So, you know, he played 79 games last year. Is that something that he's going to be able to repeat? I don't know. How do you feel about Brook Lopez and like where you would draft him?
Yeah, I mean, in terms of durability, he had that one season. He's been with Milwaukee 6 seasons. He played 13 games that one season. Otherwise, 81, 68, 70, 78, 79. Like, the dude's been available, and he was available in Brooklyn. You know, he's a guy that, I think we can count on even at an older age on being available. But no, he's not a guy I'm going to a mid-round pick because he gives me a couple of blocks and a couple of triples. I mean, that's valuable, but it's eighth round and beyond type of valuable. He's not a guy I'm going to take any earlier than that, especially because of the age. I think maybe we do see a decline in that. Last season was a career high in blocks. This season was his second highest in blocks. Not sure if that's sustainable. Maybe he's kind of found that groove in Milwaukee where he's just going to settle in and swat shots all day. But I'm not sure that I'm going to spend a top 50 pick on somebody that gives me, you know, 2.3, 2.4 blocks and a couple of triples when he's not a particularly good rebounder and he's not a particularly good scorer. He has his nights when guys are injured or when he's just really stroking it from three. But otherwise, yeah, not very good in either of the categories.
Yeah, it is cool to see a 7-footer at his age still be productive. But like you said, he's not getting rebounds. Like, he's really just not getting rebounds for a 7-footer. The numbers should be a little bit higher if he was focusing on that, but obviously he's not. Giannis is down there. They want him, you know, as a help side defender, blocking shots and staying out on the perimeter, hitting threes. The two mock drafts that I've done for redraft, he went with the 69th pick and the 80th pick in those two. So
brutal.
Yeah. And I'm sure that's kind of where it'll be. Does he fit your build really well? In that case, maybe you take him a little bit earlier. If he doesn't, then you're probably fine passing on him for a little while. The other guy I want to talk about with the Bucks is Chris Middleton. I had this stat written down, but you mentioned it earlier. He's played 88 games the last 2 years. A lot of injuries, and a lot of, you know, trouble recovering from those injuries, really managing his knees. But he was really good in the playoffs. Do you feel more confident about him heading into next season than you may have, say, heading into the past two seasons, really?
No. If anything, I feel even less confident about him. He was a guy I didn't want to draft last year after the injury. Played 33 games two seasons ago, 55 this last season. You know, is that trend going to continue and he plays, you know, 77 this year? No, I sincerely doubt it. He's played under 30 minutes the last two seasons, even when he's been available. So, you know, even when he's played, he's been less than 100%. Numbers are still good. I mean, they're good, but they're not outrageous, right? 15, 5, and 5. I mean, that's fine. You know, a little less than a steal per game, under two triples per game, okay percentages. And so he's not a guy that's blowing me out of the water where I'm like, man, I got to draft this guy and health concerns be damned, because he's just that – he's so good that he compensates for that, you know, kind of questionable availability. I think for a guy like this who finished just inside the top 100 in per-game fantasy value, not a guy that I'm going to stick my neck out for and kind of risk that availability for my team.
And Zach, as I'm looking at these mock drafts, I forgot that you were in one, but you actually took Chris Middleton. Do you know what pick you took him with?
Oh, man, don't burn me here, man.
No. This is going to be great. You're going to love this.
Well, if it was outside the top 100, I'll tell you what. He's a guy I don't want to have on my team. If it was outside the ninth round, I'm happy with that. I'm okay with that.
Okay, so it's a 14-team league. You got him in the ninth round, so pick 123. That's this was before he played really well in the playoffs, so I really think that him playing well in the series they lost is going to give people a little bit more confidence. I don't think he'll make it there. He went 86 in the other one, but still, considering how good he has been in the past, if you have the confidence in his knees, I say that's totally fine to take him there because of what he's done on a per-game basis when he's playing the minutes. Now, if there is some sort of knee setback this summer, that's all you can say is uh-oh, because they might do that thing where they don't play him for a month and then play him 20 minutes per game for a month, and then it's like, okay, like, this is a waste of a pick. But 123 might be one of the best value Chris Middleton picks I've ever seen. So that was bravo to you in this mock draft that was done in March.
Oh, you set me up, man. I thought you were going to cook me here on this one.
Never going to make you look bad, Zach. It's impossible. We will move on to the Philadelphia 76ers, who were really, really good because Joel Embiid was basically the best player in basketball in the entire world for a nice stretch before injuring his knee. Missed a ton of time. Came back, I think, went on a really, really strong winning streak. I don't remember if it was like 8 or 9 games to close the season. And then went into the playoffs, won the play-in game against Miami, and then lost to the Knicks 4-2 after finishing seventh with their 47-35 record. They have picks 16 and 41, so they'll be able to add a pretty good player. I know they got Maxey with pick 21, I believe, so they've had success drafting in the middle of the first round.
Yep.
Will they get their next Tyrese Maxey? Who knows? But they're a contending team. Like, they're based around Embiid and Maxey. But make no mistake, they are a contending team when healthy. But now they have pretty much everybody else a free agent. So they're going to have a lot of moves to make this summer. They're already in rumors for both Paul George and Jimmy Butler. And I'm sure that there's other players that they're rumored to be interested in as well. How do you kind of feel about the Sixers, Zach?
Man, could you imagine Tobias Harris over me? Could you imagine if Jimmy Butler came and Tobias Harris is the one whose contract is up and who's presumably leaving, right? We think he's gone this summer.
There's no way he's back.
Yeah, there's no way he's back. But, I mean, could you imagine Jimmy Butler coming back to that? I couldn't see it. It would be funny. It would be great. I would love the full circle moment. I couldn't see Jimmy coming back, dude. Philly burned that bridge, I think, when they didn't re-sign him. But anyway, that's a whole nother discussion. They're going to have to go out and get a third star because you need it to compete with some of these other teams in the East, because Boston's loaded. Not to mention the Western Conference, which is completely loaded. Obviously the Bucks are going to load back up. Hopefully they'll be healthy. Indiana made some noise. New York, if everybody's healthy next season, New York just looks phenomenal. Yep. They're going to have to do something. That's number one, the competition. And number two, talk about a guy who can't get it done in the playoffs, who can't be healthy in the playoffs, and who just, I mean, he plays like crap in the playoffs compared to what he does in the regular season. This is a make or break year for Joel Embiid's legacy, I think. We can excuse a little bit maybe with the health this last year. He was obviously out there playing with, I forget the name of the, whatever he was dealing with where his eyes were funky.
Yeah.
And Bell's palsy he had.
Yeah.
He was having a really tough time. You could tell something was seriously not right. The equilibrium was off, obviously, lower body injuries. But at some point, he's got to come out here and perform in the playoffs. And so my question for this season is, does Philadelphia just go ahead and rest him every other night and just make sure that he's healthy and ready to go for the playoffs? Forget about the game cap to win MVP. Forget about the regular season record, because you know in the playoffs, if you have a healthy Embiid, you could make a serious run. That just, when have we actually gotten to see a full run of that? That's what I'm curious about his load management this year.
Yeah, I mean, that is the question, is what are they going to do? I mean, the only note I have under him in my notes is, how are we going to approach Joel Embiid? Because you mentioned his lack of playoff success. He hasn't made it to the Eastern Conference Finals. You could probably go back to every single playoff series he's played in and find some reason. Like, obviously this year it was the injuries, when they lost to the Hawks, it was, they can blame it on Ben Simmons. Like, there's always some sort of scapegoat other than Joel Embiid, or it is his lack of health, because that's obviously a pretty big factor. Tobias Harris, I think, is a pretty big scapegoat this year as well. Not saying he played well, because he didn't, but that's going to be the reason that Embiid wasn't able to make it to the next round. But when we're looking at him for fantasy, how do we approach him? Because they could take that approach that you mentioned, and I don't think it's going to be a case where people are complaining about it, because it's going to be like, no, I get it. Like, he keeps – this is the second time that he's injured this knee pretty severely. He's had a number of knee issues and other injury issues throughout his career, foot issues early on. Like, he's been phenomenal, but he just can't stay on the court. And if they're serious about winning a championship, like, okay, cool. He's gotten an MVP, probably would have gotten a second one had he played all of this year. At this point, like, they need to compete for a championship. And if they make the moves this summer, they can do that if Embiid's healthy. I would be pretty shocked if he played any back-to-backs this upcoming season. And it wouldn't be shocking to see him get just other random rest nights. And that's just the way it should be. Like, keep him in bubble wrap as much as possible because you need him healthy going into the playoffs if you want to have a chance to win, because you have the cap space and the assets to potentially, add another star. And Tyrese Maxey is a star. He proved that this season. He proved that in the playoffs. The 7 points in, I don't remember the exact time. It's not as cool as 8 points in 9 seconds, but you know what I mean. The 4 point play and then the other crazy distance three in the clutch. Dude's a star. And so they have two stars and they'll add a third. They'll add other pieces. This is a legit team, but you have to keep Embiid healthy. What are you doing as a fantasy manager? How do you feel about Embiid?
As a fantasy manager, if I can snag him in the second round, again, I'm talking out of my ass here because that won't happen. If I could grab him in the second round, one, that's where I would feel comfortable with the risk outweighing the reward, or the reward outweighing the risk, excuse me. But if I have to spend a top three pick, which presumably I would because he was fantasy's top player again, and just looking at the numbers, I think I said only Jokic could give you the type of numbers that Giannis gives you. Embiid is Giannis 2.0. I mean, he gets more points, 34 points, 11 rebounds, 5.6 assists, 1.2 steals, 1.6 blocks, 1.5 triples. Giannis doesn't give you triples either. And Embiid is not a liability at the free throw line. So, I mean, Embiid is just otherworldly. I hate watching him play. I'll just be honest with you. From a pure fan perspective, don't enjoy watching him play. But from a fantasy perspective, if this guy's on your team, you're winning many weeks just from some of these monster 50, 60-point games that he has, but played 39 games last season. And like you said, man, he continues to sustain these lower body injuries. I would feel way more comfortable, a first-round pick, I would feel way more comfortable taking an SGA, Jokic, a Luka, a Wemby. If I had a top-five pick, those are guys that I'm going to target over Embiid. They're going to give you – they're not going to give you everything that he gives you, but it'll be close enough, and I can think, hey, 65 to 70 games, maybe more. Embiid, I don't know, man. I'm praying for 55 at this point, so that would give me real pause. I would not spend a top five pick on Embiid.
Yeah, and the two mocks, he went fifth in one. And then this other one, Raf got him at pick 19. And I think that is okay. Yeah, I'll take Joel Embiid at pick 19. Like, no problem at all. But yeah, I mean, he's not a guy I'm going to take in the top five, partially because I think that there just are some other really good players, such as the ones you mentioned, along with even like a Haliburton, maybe like a Tatum or a Giannis. And then just other guys that I think I would take before Embiid, considering that, hey, he might, like it's not like like a Kawhi where it's, oh, he has this history of playing 50 games, but they're saying he's going to be healthy this year. It's, we kind of know pretty far in advance, like, hey, like this guy's probably not going to play every game this year, and they shouldn't play him every game this year because it just makes sense to keep him up in bubble wrap. And maybe Kawhi's not the best example because they should also keep him in bubble wrap, because that was an issue once again, which we'll talk about in a little bit. But Tyrese Maxey, goodness, talk about a breakout star and NBA's most improved player, not my most improved player, but the guy that won the award was Tyrese Maxey. Obviously, he did take a big leap. Kobe White is my most improved player, in my humble opinion.
Oh, I thought Johnson. I thought you were going to go Atlanta.
Had he met the 65 game cap, then yeah, easily. But since he didn't, I won't be too much of a homer and ignore the games cap just to have my guy. But Tyrese Maxey, top 20 player in fantasy. I think I have no issues taking him in the top 20 in drafts next year. How high is too high for Tyrese Maxey for you next year?
First round is too high. I think top 20 is reasonable. I'm looking here, finished 19th. Started off the season, I think for stretches, start the season, I think he was fantasy's top player for a little while, if memory serves. 25.9 points, 3.7 rebounds, 6.2 assists, a steal, three triples. Surprisingly tied with his teammate Joel Embiid and Devin Booker for the most 50-point games this season with three. And more 50-point games than Luka and Giannis. So just to highlight some of the peaks that he had. I know there were some valleys as well. There were some letdown games, especially when Embiid was out. We thought, man, maybe he would just erupt, and that didn't always happen. But this guy is a bona fide star. So, yeah, I think top 20 is fine. Is he going to continue to ascend? How much is Embiid going to sit out? And really what's going to determine where Tyrese Maxey gets picked is who's going to be that third star that they bring in. Is it going to be a PG? Is it going to be a Jimmy Buckets? Who's going to be on the squad and potentially taking away some touches and some production from him? But top 20 feels good. First round, far too high.
Yeah, I think I'm on the same page there. And you mentioned, you know, if it is a guy like Jimmy Butler that's going to have the ball in his hands a lot, what does that mean for Tyrese Maxey? A guy like Paul George, I feel like, is going to have the ball in his hands less and be more comfortable in an off-ball role. But, I mean, in my opinion, Tyrese Maxey is going to be the point guard. It's just how many other touches are these guys going to need? Looking at these, this is a list of free agents that Philly has this year. Unrestricted free agents: Tobias Harris, Kyle Lowry, Buddy Hield, Robert Covington, Nick Batum, D'Anthony Melton, Kelly Oubre, Campaign, KJ Martin. That's pretty much their most of their rotation is an unrestricted free agent. So they obviously have a lot of cap space or a lot of opportunity to make moves and a lot of spots to fill. Could be a very different team next year. Could be pretty similar. They could resign a lot of guys. One guy I'm pretty confident, as I said earlier, that they're not going to resign is Tobias Harris, who was, you know, not great in the playoffs. Didn't have a great season overall, but he has been a pretty successful fantasy player in the past, specifically in category leagues. The value looks great, mostly just because the numbers are pretty well-rounded. It doesn't shine in any individual category, but just kind of does a little bit of everything to where he can, you know, be a player that you want to roster in 9-cat leagues. Do you think a fresh start in a place that, you know, maybe the fans aren't quite as harsh on him, the team gives him a little bit more confidence and show like, hey, like we believe in you as a player. And just like a fresh start, like, do you think that would be something that can get him back to being, I don't know, a player that you feel confident in? I don't even know how to put it, because the numbers haven't been that bad in 9-cat leagues. Like, he's been hovering around that 50 to 60 range the last 3 years. I don't expect it to get much better, though. He was a top 30 guy the year before that. Do you think a fresh start is going to be really beneficial for him, or just, okay, like maybe it'll be good for him, but he's still not a guy I'm interested in?
I think he's, I mean, so to your point, hovering around the 50 to 60 mark, he was 61st this year. I'm looking at B-ball monster here, 61st per game in 9-cat. That was his worst finish in five seasons, but it's been 2, 4, 6, 8, 9 straight seasons where he's finished inside the top 65. A guy that's super boring. Again, he's not going to give you 50 burgers. He's not going to have any highlight plays, but he's going to do the dirty work. He's a good shooter. He's efficient from the floor and from the free throw line. Very low turnovers, hits threes at a decent clip, scores at a decent clip. He's not going to drag you down there. Rebounds enough where he won't drag you down there. A little bit, you know, in the assist department, a little bit in the defensive department. Just a guy across the board that does enough to just kind of be one of those glue guys on your fantasy team. And maybe somebody that gets undervalued in fantasy drafts. But going back those 9 seasons, he played for Orlando, Detroit, the Clippers, and now Philly. So no matter where he stopped, he's found that role with the team of just being that, you know, hey, I'm going to play my part. I'm going to do what the team asked me to do. And for fantasy managers, he's been super reliable, man. And he plays. He doesn't sit a lot of games. He doesn't get injured. He's available. He's consistent. He might be a little vanilla, but man, that's the most popular ice cream flavor for a reason, man. People like consistency.
Yeah. No, I mean, it's a great point. Like, he's just kind of always been there. Like, he doesn't do anything super special, but he's been solid for almost a decade. Yep. So, and Yeah, I gotta imagine that wherever he ends up, he's gonna be pretty solid. But the end to his tenure in Philly could not have been any worse, as he was held scoreless in 29 minutes in their Game 6 loss to the Knicks at home. That'll be a moment that Philly fans will remember forever. Yeah. And just as the last game that Tobias Harris put on a 76ers jersey. Another guy that's going to be a free agent that I would imagine they have a little bit more reason to bring back, a little, I would imagine, is D'Anthony Melton, who's been kind of a fantasy hero, underground fantasy hero, for a little while. It's just been all about minutes for him, but consistent source of threes and steals. And he had some good stretches as a starter earlier this season, and then the season before that, some really good stretches as well. Do you still feel confident in D'Anthony Melton? I know he missed a lot of time this season, which kind of seemed to throw off his rhythm. And then when he came back, it just wasn't able to replicate that success that he had shown in previous games that season and in previous seasons. Is he a guy that you still are fully believing in, or am I misspeaking and you are never a D'Anthony Melton believer?
I've always been a fan for Melton. Okay. You know, like you said, he's a guy that the fantasy community has always kind of rallied around for his potential. I mean, we've seen him in extended minutes put up some huge games. I think fantasy managers like that he can score. He's a very good rebounder for a guard, for somebody his size. Obviously, he can facilitate pretty well. We haven't seen him in that role necessarily as a defender. Always among the league leaders in steals, even when he's playing kind of depressed minutes, and a good three-point shooter as well. So the 3-and-D type of guy that can sometimes score, get teammates involved, rebound, turnovers are low. Field goal percentage sucks. I mean, so you're going to have to deal with that. Free throw percentage, not the greatest either. So again, he may not be everybody's flavor. He's not the vanilla of a Tobias Harris. He's more of a pistachio type guy, which is not for everybody, but definitely has his niche in the community. But I'd love to see him, what he can do with some bigger minutes, man. 27.9 minutes last season, 26.9 this season, injured, only played 38 games this year. I would love to see him go to another team that gives him a featured role. I don't want to see him in Philly. From a fantasy perspective, I'm not interested if he stays in Philly. He was a top 100 guy, but I really need to see more, man. I'd love to see what he can do with another team. I think the potential is there. We've just been leaving a lot of meat on the bone here.
Yeah, Zach, like, I need you to write the column where you compare every NBA player, not every NBA player, but as many NBA players as you can to ice cream flavors now, because you've just done two in a row where you just did vanilla for Tobias Harris. And you don't have to lock those in. I'm sure you can find better fits for vanilla and pistachio than those two, potentially, maybe not. But I'm fully expecting you to get that taken care of now. Like, that has to be a thing.
Let's do it just in time for summer, man. That wasn't even planned, but yeah.
That's beautiful, because you have the Thanksgiving one where you compare NBA players to Thanksgiving foods, and now you have your ice cream one for the summer. That's beautiful. We'll move on to our last team with the Clippers, and we'll see if we can put Zach on the spot and have him come up with more ice cream flavors for some of these guys. But the Clippers went 51-31, were healthier this year than they have been in a long time. Finished fourth in the West, still lost first round to Dallas, who at this point I would be pretty – it would be a miracle if Minnesota came back. I think Dallas is up 30 or 29 at halftime. So not probably going to be any sort of comeback there. So the Clippers weren't the only one. And actually they pushed the Mavs to a six-game series as opposed to Minnesota lost in five. But the Clippers only have pick 46 this year in the draft. They're an aging contender, and you know, potentially I could have said that for the Bucks as well, but man, it's got to feel like if the Clippers choose to run it back, because there's already rumors that Paul George could be on the way out because the Clippers reportedly don't want to give him as much money as they've given Kawhi. Like, they've kind of set this standard of this is how much Kawhi's worth. Paul George just has to be worth less than that. which I'm sure that doesn't make Paul George very happy, but I can't imagine. But yeah, like if they choose to run it back, I would imagine it's the last time they try and run it back. I mean, they just gave Tyronn Lue the extension, so he's here for the long haul. But regardless, like they have the players that they need to be going all in. And then if they decide to not, then it's going to be hard to trade some of these guys because of their age and injury history. Zach, is there any chance that this Clippers experiment actually works out, or is this one of the is it a most disappointing one, or is it a biggest what if just because of the amount of injuries that they've had?
I mean, I think it's both. I think it's definitely one of the biggest what ifs. I don't know what they do for this season. I don't know what else you can do because the only guys they have passed this season under contract, Kawhi Leonard, Norm Powell, and rookie Kobe Brown. They have three guys under contract beyond this season. So you pretty much have to do this. This is your last season with this squad. According to Woj, you know, the Clippers are, quote, determined to keep both Paul George and Harden. What that looks like financially, I'm not sure. They're going to be in a lot of cap hell if they bring those guys back. This is not a talented bench. We saw what happened when a big three that's very top heavy and can't stay healthy goes into the playoffs in the Western Conference. They get swept by Minnesota in the first round. And we don't know what their future is looking like in Phoenix either. I would say this is already a failed experiment. Even if you win the title this year, what have the Clippers done up to this point? And to be totally honest, I don't see them winning a title. We have Dallas who's emerged. We have the Timberwolves who have emerged. We always have Golden State maybe ready to retool. I know that was way off the mark. We have the Nuggets, defending champs, who won't repeat but maybe get back there again. We have Oklahoma City. Who I think has a much brighter future than this Clippers team. So I think you have to go all in this year. But if you lose Paul George and James Harden, then you trade Kawhi Leonard and just blow the whole thing up, because then it's just Kawhi Leonard and who else. So I'm very interested to see what happens. I think if the PG domino falls and he signs with the Magic or the Sixers or God forbid Detroit, if he goes to one of these teams, I mean, that's just, again, talking out of my ass. I'm doing a lot of that tonight. But if the PG domino falls or even the James Harden domino falls, I think the rest of it is just a ripple effect from there, and they just blow this thing up. I don't know how else you approach it.
Yeah, and it'd be interesting if they did, because I don't remember how many more, but I think the Thunder still have more Clipper first round picks. So that would just only add ammunition to what Sam Presti has built there, which is absolutely insane. But this playoffs, I think for the first time to me, really felt like a changing of the guard where, yeah, you know, the Lakers, Suns, and Clippers all lost the first round, which is not like some like brand new thing, but even like last year, the Suns pushed Denver to six games, and you know, they probably still would have lost, but I think Chris Paul and DeAndre Ayton were not able to play the final couple games of that series. It was really just Devin and Booker and Kevin Durant. Still felt like they were in that series. The Lakers obviously made the Western Conference Finals. The Clippers always felt like, hey, what if they didn't get hurt? They'd be fine. The Warriors lost in the play-in tournament. That's another team. So it feels like it's okay. Like it's actually the young guys league now. Like, yeah, these teams will still be good, but we have Dallas and Minnesota in the conference finals. Denver's still there. They're kind of in like the middle of that. And then obviously the Thunder and Wemby's on the way. So if you're going to win a championship, go do it now before this guy wins the next like 15 or whatever. But yeah, it does feel like if they try and do it, it's going to be one last hurrah. But for fantasy, Kawhi played 68 games. Mm-hmm. Paul George played 74 games. James Harden played 72 games. Man, those ended up being some pretty good bargains, considering Harden ended up going a little bit later than he probably would have because of the issues in Philly, where it didn't seem like they were going to trade him, but he just said, I will not play basketball for Daryl Morey ever again. We'll start with Kawhi. Do you trust him heading into next season? Obviously played more games last year, but then had another injury in the playoffs. So is he a guy that you feel more confident in drafting, or did the injury in the playoffs kind of set you back a little bit and you would have had confidence in him, or is this just a guy that has been on your no-fly list for the last 5 years?
I'll start by saying, do I trust him? Hell no, man. It's a big hell no. Do I trust Kawhi Leonard? He's been on my no-fly list for a while. Obviously, that didn't pan out this year. He was a top seven player in fantasy on a per-game basis. He played 68 games, as you mentioned. That's his most since he was back with the Spurs, man. Like, he hasn't played that many games. Even when they won the chip with Toronto, he didn't play that many games. Didn't even hit 60 games in his first three seasons with the Clippers, not counting the season that he completely sat out. So hell no, I don't trust him to play that many games. And he is he's only getting older. He's shown us time and time again who he is, and I'm going to believe him. He's shown me that he's a guy that's going to barely play 55 games. I was praying for Embiid to play 55 games. I'll be saying that prayer and getting the rosary beads out and hoping that Kawhi Leonard is able to replicate what he did last season. No, I do not think that happens again.
Okay, then we'll just keep going down the list. Because I think I feel a little bit better about Kawhi than I did heading into last season. But this last knee injury in the playoffs did kind of worry me a little bit. Like, yeah. Is he going to play for Team USA now? Or is he going to sit out of that? I think that'll be a pretty good indicator of how we should view him heading into next season. Because he's on the roster right now.
He should not. If he was actually committed to NBA basketball, he would not play
for Team USA. I have a $10 bet riding on him playing in that, because I was very confident that he would. But one of my friends said there's no way that he actually plays on the team. And then he got and hurt his knee. So that was great. But how do you feel about Paul George? Do you feel confident in him after he just played 74 games? 74 games. Do you feel confident in him?
I feel a little more confident in him. I'm still not feeling the greatest about him, especially with his injury history. But he hasn't sat out an entire season since being with the Clippers like Kawhi did. So I think that definitely plays a part in my confidence level. But since joining the Clippers, 48, 54, 31, 56 games before playing 74 this season. He's shown us who he is over the last four or five seasons. And I'm going to choose to believe him. I am not confident that he gets back up to 74 games. If he gives me 65 games, I would be absolutely thrilled with that. Do I think he has a better shot of playing that many games than Kawhi Leonard? 100% yes. My confidence level in Paul George from an availability standpoint, 6 or 7, Kawhi Leonard, 2.
And then on that same scale, where's James Harden?
James Harden, I'm a lot more confident in that he will be available. He's not a guy that is consistently missing time due to injuries. He's a guy that's consistently doing stupid stuff off the court, requesting trades, going to a kid's camp and bad-mouthing his GM. He's that type of guy. So he's the type of guy that if Paul George got re-signed and the Clippers go all in for one more season, it wouldn't shock me for him to come out and say, yeah, screw you guys, I'm going to go off and sign with, I don't even know, Portland. I mean, just something completely wacky and off the wall, because he loves the Pacific Northwest and hiking. I have no idea what that is going to do from a day-to-day basis. But in terms of fantasy, even taking on this role with these other guys healthy and kind of playing his third fiddle sometimes, still finished, early third rounder, well-rounded guy in terms of, what he brings to your fantasy team. He's still doing what he did in Houston, which is just that across-the-board production. It's just scaled way back. So you're getting a very, very good and diverse fantasy skill set. It's just a matter of where is he going to be playing and who's going to be on his team.
Yeah, I was going to ask because he's going to be almost 35. How much longer do you think he can keep doing this? Like, is he a guy that you would take in the second, third round this year? Or is he a guy that you're probably going to avoid that early on?
So I think with him, and this is the kind of the thing that is working well for him is his outside shot. You know, we saw guys break down and kind of, you know, lose some of the ability and some of that production. A guy like a Russell Westbrook, depending on his athleticism and getting to the bucket. A guy like a Derrick Rose, who, because of that skill set, you know, ultimately got too injured to play at a high level for too long. Harden was always that guy that was getting to the rim and getting to the free throw line. And even since his free throw attempts have dwindled, you know, he still is able to get teammates involved at a high level. Led the league in assists last season. You know, he's still a guy that is going to get you elite assists. He's still a guy that can hit threes at a very high clip. He's a guy whose game will, I think, age much more gracefully maybe than what we expect. So he's a guy that even coming up on the age 35 season still has a few more good seasons left in him.
And that's very fair. I think that's a really good way to look at it, because a lot of times I think when especially guards, I wouldn't even say especially guards, just anyone kind of turns 35, like, wow, like it's probably coming up on retirement time for him, which is still possible. But he's been playing at a high level and played at a high level last year for the Clippers. So we'll be keeping an eye on him. Ivica Zubac is the last guy that I kind of wanted to talk about, but I wasn't like really dying to talk about him. It's just kind of like, who else is there to talk about with the Clippers? Because like, we could talk about Russ, but he's kind of past his days of being a fantasy guy. We could talk about one of those young guys at the end of the bench, like a Bones Highland or a BJ Boston or a Kobe Brown. But in reality, like, they're not going to see many minutes this upcoming season because the focus is going to be on winning a championship. And they didn't play much this past season. There was long stretches where Bones Highland wasn't in the rotation at all. Like, there was the time right before the All-Star break where they told him, hey, just stay home, buddy. You're not playing. You're just going to sit on the bench. So just stay home. No. Zubac, is he a guy that, you know, we know that they're not going to force feed him 32, 33 minutes, like maybe a traditional starting center. They're going to rotate with either Daniel Theis, Mason Plumlee, depending on who's healthy. That was kind of the rotation. And even some small ball lineups. Is his near double-double with over a block in limited minutes enough for you to kind of take him in the later rounds, or is that not enough?
Yeah, I mean, that's fine, right? Like, I'll take him in the later rounds. I won't be excited about it. You know, so I like to take a swing late drafts, and a lot of the time I get burned by it. You're looking outside the top 100, maybe you waited on a center, or, you know, maybe your center lineup needs a little bit. Maybe you went early on center and then the middle rounds you focused on guard and forward, and you need a backup viable guy there. Yeah, he'll be a guy that'll get you 10 and 8, maybe 10 and 9, a block a game, decent field goal percentage. He's not going to get you any assists or do anything else flashy or noteworthy, but for what he brings to your team, he's fine. Finished 102nd per game fantasy value, which was the best of his career. But for a big guy, he's somebody that's always available, doesn't miss games. You know, he can fill that role for you based on the right team fit. But I'm not going to be excited drafting Ivica Zubac on my fantasy team.
Yeah, I mean, that's probably the only way to put it. So we don't have to spend any more time talking about him. Zach, that's all that I've got for today. Outside of your ice cream column, is there anything you want to give us a inside scoop as to what might be coming up for you content-wise?
Dude, the wordsmithing there, pure that's brilliant. This was anybody that's not pre-planned. This was just off the cuff. The brilliance of Noah Rubin and the Tank Me Later podcast. It brings out the best in me talking with you, man. That's why I always like doing our live streams. Always felt like I was at my best when we were working together. Nothing right now to highlight other than our 6-week series on fantasy recaps that we've been doing over at Roto World. Me, you, and Raph, we've been cranking them out 5 days a week for the last, I think we're on week 3 or week 4.
I think week 3, yeah.
Week 3. So we got 3 more weeks left after this. One of the divisions I had Denver, Minnesota, and OKC. So I got all them jam-packed the last week. I got 3 articles coming out that week. And I think 2 more over the next couple of weeks. beyond that. So yeah, just be taking a look for those. We're doing all 30 teams. Each of us is doing 10, and I know Noah and Raph have been putting out some great ones, so just keep an eye out for that.
Yeah, and if you want, you can. I would recommend following Zach on Twitter at Zach the Monster, and you can find me at NoahRubin22. But Zach, thank you as always for joining me, and thank you everyone for listening, and I'll see you next time.
You just listened to another episode from the Fantasy Basketball International Podcast Network. Thanks for joining us. And for more information about joining our community, please check out our website at fbibasketball.com.